The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Here. Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga. I'm your host, Rick Thompson. And we've got a special guest this morning, and we're going to get right to it because we've got a lot to talk about, and he's got a lot going on today. So I want to welcome Michael Phillips, who's running for Saratoga County DA on the Democratic ticket. And good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
How's everything with you?
Good. 1.2.
Yeah.
I'm on the Democratic line, but I'm also on an independent line.
Excellent.
The independent line is titled Justice and Public Safety.
Okay, well, we can use some of that in Saratoga Springs.
Who can be against justice and public safety?
It was
quite an exercise, actually. The requirement under state election law, the requirement for a independent line is 1,500 signatures by registered voters. And they can't have already signed a petition with either of the four permanent parties.
Sure. Right?
Democrat, Republican, Conservative, or Working Families. Which is interesting because the requirement's 1,500 for a county race. But if you're one of the parties, one of the four permanent parties, the requirement's 1,000. So go figure.
Right. All right?
So you want to get, and I think to a certain extent that's also manifestation of the power of incumbency, because you're just making it tough on somebody who wants to get an independent line together. Okay, challenge accepted. We needed to go out and get 1,500 signatures. And what we did was came back with 2,151. Part of that is, okay, if you were close to 1,500, you can't anticipate a legal challenge as to the validity of some of the signatures.
Sure.
But if you come in with an additional 45%, which is what we did, there might have been one or two problems with some of the legibility of some of the signatures, but nobody's going to find 600 and knock you off the ballot. And we had 35 people carry petitions for that independent line, and it was an absolute joy to file that petition, and we got as many people as we could who had carried petitions. There were two 18-year-old high school students who got involved, and up to a Bangladeshi IT engineer who lives in Clifton Park, become a very good friend, and then a couple of retirees. So it was a very diverse group that submitted the petitions back in May, which is the last time I was on. I distinctly remember the last time I was here because it was the day before spring turkey season.
Exactly.
Yes.
And you ended up getting one.
Oh, I ended up getting cold in the woods. Because,
oh, you didn't get
no,
one?
No, because...
Oh, I thought you texted me that you had gotten
my,
one.
I'm not as good at calling them in as I should be. Which is another example of, you know, take a failure in life and keep moving.
That's right.
I've got a couple of cousins that are masters at it, and I've got to do some work on that. But considering I have a full-time job and I've been running for district attorney, there's not a lot of time for recreation.
I got no, and that's been for a long time that you haven't had time, because it just isn't like a month before election that you do that. I want to remind people that real election day is Tuesday, November the 8th, and that Tuesday, November 8th is election day, so get out and vote. You know, that's a right we have that many people in the world don't have, so it's great to get out there.
There's 10 days of early voting.
Yeah. I know, but there's 10 days of early voting, but I don't count those because election day is November the 5th or the 8th.
Yeah.
So I know what you're saying, though.
I heard a politician who was out running for office who said, folks, there's 10 days of early voting and you should vote on at least five of them.
Exactly. So. Well, the one I always heard was vote early and vote often.
Yeah.
But,
Chicago,
I don't know.
Chicago and Albany.
Chicago and Albany, right. But, you know, in all honesty, for so many, a couple hundred years, we've been voting on Election Day. And, there was never really a problem. I don't know. But I don't want to get into that right now. One of the things that I did want to talk to you about is if you could give us, you did this the last time, but we're getting so close to Election Day now that I think people are paying more attention to what's going on. A little bit of your background.
Sure. I've been a lawyer for 32 years. I suppose one of the things that I've always taken pride in is that either I'm a late bloomer or I was looking for a real-world experience. You pick either option. I didn't go to law school till the day after I turned 30, and I distinctly remember that. It was August 20th, 1987. And then I did the night program at Western New England. So I had a full-time job, and I was driving back and forth between this area and Springfield, Massachusetts, three nights a week at least to start. And it's funny. It went by in a heartbeat. Passed the New York State bar exam on the first crack, which was February, because I finished in December of 90. Took the bar exam in February of 91. I mean, the bar exam's offered two times in the year, February and July. And I don't know how you take it in July because the weather's so nice and you want to be out doing stuff. And, kudos to all those people who have done that. But February, at least, was a bit easier because it was cold and dark and outside. And I could study and try and work out and study, which is all you do when you're prepping for the bar exam. I remember 10 days before the bar exam, I broke out in hives. So I used to, lay there and scratch for about 10 minutes before I went to sleep. And then after the bar exam was over, the hives went away. So go figure. First 10 years of my career, I was kind of doing pretty much whatever I could do to pay off my student loans. But that ended up being criminal defense work and starting off with minor stuff, of course. And civil litigation, plaintiff's personal injury work. And then I was fortunate enough to get recruited because of some personal contacts and the need for help. I went to work for GE Energy, supporting these huge power plant projects. And how do you go from criminal defense work and civil litigation to working on engineering, procurement, and construction problems? These $300 million projects where you're building a power plant in China. One of the things I really enjoyed when I was in law school was a course called Conflicts of Law, which is multiple parties, multiple states' rules. I mean, just for example, five passengers in a plane crash into a mountain in West Virginia, just hypothetical. The plane is registered to a Delaware corporation, but it's housed in New York. And the people who got injured in the crash were from New Jersey, New York, and Florida. It's like, okay, whose statute of limitations, whose measure of damages applies? And still the leading case law in these conflicts of law issues is still New York State case law. It's a case called Babcock v. Jackson, which I still remember from law school from 34 years ago, because once the stuff gets implanted in your brain. And I got a little confident when I took the bar exam, because I specifically remember citing that case law, and I even had the specific cite for it. But I had worked with some incredibly smart people. This was what was during a time called the gas turbine bubble, when GE was, they couldn't make gas turbines fast enough. And I did a lot of work in China. And for a guy that grew up in upstate New York and went to law school nights, I mean, my dad is a pipe fitter, and I showed Rick my...
You showed me your tie clip.
My pipe fitter tie clip that I'm wearing all day today.
And that comes in handy, too, if you need to use a wrench.
Oh, you have to defend yourself, too. You can just take your tie clip off.
Yeah.
I had an opportunity to stand on the Great Wall of China a couple times, which is a pretty heady experience, all things considered. The work kind of died off at General Electric. But during my time there, and this is part of my motivation for why I'm doing this, I've had an opportunity to work with some very exceptional leaders in the course of my career. people who created a kind of team environment where you looked forward to coming to work in the morning because you were working with a group of very smart people, and it was a collaborative team effort. And that's exactly the kind of environment I want to create at the district attorney's office. I mean, there's a staff of 20 lawyers. You know, lawyers are, for the most part, pretty smart people. And if you're a prosecutor, you do it because it's a calling. You're not necessarily motivated because you're making ridiculous amounts of money. You're trying to do a significant public service. And, you know, the administration of justice at the county level is, you know, at the risk of using a terrible old cliche, I hate using cliches, but this is kind of where the rubber meets the road, okay? Mm-hmm. This is the friction point. This is the point at which justice is applied on a daily level. And I'm a big back the blue guy, and I believe you back the police by prosecuting the people they arrest or finding that application of justice in a given situation that fits. I mean, for example, the last thing you want to do as a district attorney is stick somebody with a criminal record that really, you know, maybe the situation, a younger person just made a dumb mistake.
Right.
Okay. Or there's a diversion program available. What you want to be able to do is set this up so that whoever is in that situation, because I did criminal defense law for 10 years. The criminal justice system is focused in on you. It's almost impossible to turn it around from a criminal defense perspective. I mean, what you can do is try and divert the impact so that if your person recognizes that they were in the wrong place at the wrong time doing the wrong thing, in those situations where a diversion program would be necessary, yeah, that's what you're looking to do. Now, there are predators that need to be put away, and that's kind of a different topic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But anyway, back to what I was talking about.
And career criminals, I would think, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like you said, the person that makes a mistake, a young guy that makes a dumb mistake, is in the wrong place at the right time. And like you said, there should be some program that doesn't follow them for the rest of their life.
Well, my experience in criminal defense work is that most people, as terrible as this is going to sound, most people were guilty of something. Maybe not exactly what they got charged with. And in many cases, it was being in the wrong place at the wrong time, executing poor judgment. I'll tell you, one of the specific issues I'd like to correct here in Saratoga County is that if you do a Google search on worst counties for DUI in the United States, just Google search that. Worst counties, United States, DUI. Saratoga County is going to pop up. Saratoga County is rated, and this was a Automobile Insurance Institute, so hardly a radical organization. Has a study that ranks Saratoga County as 13th county, the 13th worst county in the United States for DUI. You've got a problem with recidivism. People are being run through this victim's impact panel multiple times. And my perspective is, okay, you got arrested for DUI, we put you through a victim's impact panel, and if you're back here again for a second or third time, with the DUI, obviously the victim's impact panel didn't have any impact. And maybe you need to start losing your privilege, not a right, maybe you need to start losing your privilege to operate a motor vehicle on the roads in Saratoga County. Because I got to tell you, I don't want to be the district attorney that shows up at the funeral of a seven-year-old that was the victim of a recidivist drunk driver. So, and today, there's absolutely, we're both about the same age. Mm-hmm. All right, look, I'm 65.
Right.
All right.
I'm only 27, but we're pretty close.
Okay, I always said 39.
Yeah.
You've got Uber, you've got Lyft, you've got any number of ride-sharing alternatives out there. There's zero excuse for operating what's essentially a missile.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people lose sight of the fact that cars are big, heavy things moving at speeds. They can be weaponized. There's no excuse for this. There's no excuse for operating one of these things under the influence of anything, because now we're getting to the point where Now, marijuana is moving to, cannabis is moving to be legalized. Okay. Well, if you're going to do that, find somebody to drive or get a lift, you know, because you are endangering people's lives. And that the charge of a district attorney, as a top law enforcement official in the county, is to make the county a safe place. And we're not doing real well on DUIs in Saratoga County, and that's a statement of fact.
Yeah. You know, I was always impressed with a law group out of the Albany area, I think, that offered free rides on New Year's Eve. You know, I think that's that shows a concern for the community by doing that. I mean, it draws attention to them, but on the other hand, it shows a real commitment to the community by doing that.
Right.
So people do have alternatives.
I finished up my time with General Electric, again, having done some MBA work and been through their Crotonville management training classes, because in order to be a good district attorney, you know, you've obviously got to be a competent attorney, but you also need to know how to train and lead an office. I've had that training. I'm really excited about the opportunity to be able to create the type of work environment in the district attorney's office where people are excited about coming to work. It's a collaborative team effort, and we do the best possible work we can do. I intend, if the voters hear my message and elect me district attorney, look, I started my career doing justice courts. I'll take a justice court assignment along with everybody else in the office. That's one of the keys to leadership. One of the best leaders I worked for would dig right in and work the project management issues or the commercial issues we were working on. The guy had an engineering degree, but he was one of the sharpest commercial minds I had ever worked with as well. And he's, you know, okay, it gets to be a little late. He's still sitting there in the office with you. I mean, I think that's what good leaders do.
Yeah, well, I had my own businesses, and I also worked for a lot of people. And the philosophy always was, don't ask anybody to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. Now, that's a cliche, but it's true.
There was last time around we were talking about books. So somebody ever asks you what your favorite book is, this is an impossible question to answer. I mean, there's a group of books that have affected you in the course of your lives, and they're your favorites for different reasons. But one of the first management guru manuals, if you will, that was out there was a book called In Search of Excellence by, the author's name was Tom Peters. Now, Tom Peters is an interesting story in himself. This book came out in the early 1980s. But Tom Peters was a swift boat captain in the Vietnam War. He was an officer in the United States Navy. And one of the stories in the book is that, you know, Peters was a decorated officer. I mean, these swift boats got themselves into some nasty situations. Mm-hmm. And Peters had taken on a particularly difficult assignment. And as a consequence, he got a recommendation, just a thank you letter from his commanding officer. He was also decorated with official medals a couple of times. At one point, because of his perspective, he got rid of the medals, but he kept the recommendation letter. The letter from his immediate supervisor, the letter from his commanding officer, meant more than all the pieces of tin they were going to put on his chest, which is, you know, that says something about organizational leadership right there.
What made you, said you started law school when you were 30?
Mm-hmm.
All right. What made you want to be a lawyer at 30 years old? That's not old, but, you know, I mean, usually you get out of high school, maybe take a couple of years off and go to law school or go right out of college. Because it's interesting. My brother-in-law became an attorney maybe 3 or 4 years after he had graduated. So what made you decide to go into law at 30?
I definitely would not have been ready for the rigor of law school just out of college. I mean, a lot of attorneys have a running joke about it. We're all a little ADD because you got to keep a lot of balls in the air and you have to stay focused on 3 or 4 different things at the same time. Earlier in my life, I had a hard time sitting down for much more than 5 or 10 minutes. And you've got to, people I've encountered in the course of my life who are doing academic work say, well, okay, how do you get good grades? 6 words, sit down and do the work. You just got to sit down, focus, and do the work. How do I get A's? Sit down and do the work. If you keep doing it until you understand it. I mean, my process for prepping for exams in law school is still a process I pretty much use in prepping for trials or doing motion papers. I will write the concepts out. With law school, it was, all right, I had my class notes, I had a commercial outline, and I had the book, and I would synthesize the three sources of information into a narrative. That's the same process that I use today when you're looking at, all right, you've got evidence, you've got an investigator's report, and you've got witness statements, and you need to be able to process all three of these sources of information into one narrative, because fundamentally, trial work is telling a story. I mean, I was at the Saratoga County Bar Association dinner the other night, and you're constantly reminded that, I think, at least, that the best storytellers are experienced attorneys, because they've been doing it for 20, 30 years, and they kind of understand how to deliver a story. But I did a number of jobs out of college. My father taught me how to weld when I was 15, because he was a really smart and very talented pipe fitter. And I was going to make more money at that point in time, again, to pay off student loans, because I passed the state welder certification test, so I could get out and make money out of a couple hiring halls. And I wasn't ready to go to work with a shirt and tie on. That didn't start until I was 26. And the last job I had before I went to law school, I was the mayor of Albany's executive assistant. This was Mayor Whalen. Mm-hmm. During the tricentennial, 85 to 87. And he needed somebody in the office to kind of keep everything running during that 1986 tricentennial. And so I did everything from, it was a great job. I did everything from write speeches to keep confused people out of the mayor's office. and then, you know, make sure these events came off of running around with a clipboard. But I had noticed that probably 85% of the people who were coming across my desk, because in those days it was the mayor's office, me, and a receptionist and two secretaries. It's fairly sparse staff. The people coming across my desk to go into the mayor's office to talk to the boss, 80% of them were lawyers. So while I always knew that I sort of kind of wanted to go to law school, because of a lot of reasons, that was the final push. That was, okay, it's time to go. So I only applied to one law school because I was only going to do Western New England because it was the night program. I had to work days. And I got in, and there it is. I mean, and the rest has been this 32 incredible journey, really. Everything from, you know, representing people and their problems to being able to stand on the Great Wall of China to, in the last couple of years, working for the New York State Department of Health. December of 2019, I got assigned to a bureau doing infection control enforcements, regulation prosecutors for nursing homes in New York City. This is December of 2019. So who knew what was coming up over the hill? I work with a bureau of fine attorneys, and we were faced with this problem where people were dying in nursing homes as a result of this infection. And in March of 2020, we knew two things about COVID. Number one, it was highly contagious. And number two, if you were over the age of 65 and you had any comorbidities at all, mm-hmm. and you got it,
99% chance.
There was a good chance you weren't going to make it. And I think that the New York State Department of Health at that point in time did the best we could with what we had. There were a lot of very smart people, a lot of whom have since left. But it was a high-stress environment. It was high-volume work, and I had the experience with GE and in private practice that I was able to step up and respond along with my colleagues. So I've had this really great journey, and personally, I think being district attorney in Saratoga County, I mean, look, I'm 65. I'm not doing this because I'm setting up a run for Congress or I want to be a judge. Sure. I'm doing this because I want to be one of the best district attorneys in New York State. I mean, I just think at this point it would be a great way to give back to this community that I grew up around. I mean, I fished Saratoga Lake out of my grandfather's trailer when I'm 10 years old. On our Facebook page is a picture of me holding up a string of bluegills and walleyes with my grandfather in this 14-foot aluminum boat with a 5-horsepower engine on the back of it, which seemed to work just fine. I'd get all excited when he took out the 7.5-horse engine. And so I live on the lake. I'm really not much for fishing. But I see guys now with these really beautiful bass boats with these 200-horsepower engines on it. And I just, you know, the fish don't swim that fast. You know? Yeah. But, you know, the 5-horse engine seemed to work really well with me and my grandfather. Yeah.
And you got great memories of 5-horsepower. But multitasking seems to be one of your fortes. And I think multitasking is required from a DA's position. Right. I mean, we talked about keeping tabs on the people that work with you. And did you develop, you said you were, I mean, we all have ADD, I think, at some point. Did you develop the multitasking when you were closer to going to law school? Or could you do that as a young guy learning welding and that?
It really became a matter of survival. And I'm sure the folks that are getting out of schools now are going to laugh when I say this, but I got out of law school and I had $40,000 in student loan debt, which today is nothing.
Yep.
And this was 1991. And for me, that was just, it drove a lot of my decision making, and you've got to hustle. I mean, you've got to do what you can do. One of the things I did was I went to work for a couple of real estate developers who were putting in Rite Aid pharmacies in the area, the one on West Avenue.
Yeah, right by me.
I worked on the permitting for that. I also did one in Amsterdam and one in Ticonderoga. And I learned the right-to-build process, which had always, because I've always done a little real estate on the side. I'm living in the second of two homes that I built on Saratoga Lake. They were both camp teardowns. Mm-hmm. The first one, I bought an old camp. Nobody else was going to touch this because it was in a federal flood zone, a 100-year federal flood zone. And there was no developer that was going to do this because it was a risk. So I bought this old camp. I ripped off the shingles. I ripped off the siding. The Quaker Springs Volunteer Fire Department came along, bale hay and a match, torched it for me. Hour and a half, pile of ashes. Cost me two cases of beer and some donuts. Which, you know, was a lot cheaper than the $10,000 to $15,000 you're going to take to cart it all away.
Hey.
Yeah. So we built the home. Dad did the plumbing and heating. And I had this, I had to do a retaining wall on the fly. An 80-foot long, 6-foot high retaining wall after the foundation had already been poured. So, you know, project management, there's always going to be something you're not going to see coming. So I was working for General Electric at the time, and I talked to a couple civil engineers. Guys, how do I do this? So they gave me a couple ideas. I found some plans at the repository for all human knowledge, which is called the Internet now, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. My gosh.
So I built this 80-foot-long, 6-foot-high retaining wall out of 6x6 rough-cut hemlock. And, you know, if you do a retaining wall, you've got these dead men in tiebacks.
Right.
So there's as much... in this case, wood, supporting the structure as there is that you can see. And my dad had an ugly GMC pickup that was essentially pink. It was purplish pink that he got at an auction. And that was my dad. He got a good truck. Yeah, what, who cares what
color? What's the color?
Yeah. And I hauled, there used to be a lumber mill up in Shushan, up in Washington County. Shushan Brentwood, and I hauled all of that wood back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and pretty much carried every one of those pieces, unloaded off the truck. We had a couple guys help us out, and I remember we started on a Thursday, and we put the last course in on, it was Memorial Day weekend. We put the last course in on Monday, on Memorial Day, so it was a great project.
What's going on with the campaign? I know you mentioned a few things this morning of what your day... it's not that busy. I mean, what the heck? What's going on, and how has it been? I mean, you have to visit so many places, meet so many people. What's going on with the campaign?
So let's start off with some numbers. There's 239,000 people in Saratoga County. I mean, this is not up to the minute, but roughly, approximately, it's 239,000 people in Saratoga County. It's and try driving from Corinth to Waterford.
One of the largest counties.
It's spread out, but what I'm finding is, since it's not just me, I mean, there's a team of people that have been helping me out since January, and I've been very beneficiary of some very old friends, people who have known me in excess of 30 years, and some very new friends that I've become very close to in the last, 10 months. It's been a tremendous help. And the driver is that this is the first contested race for district attorney in Saratoga County in at least 50 years. I've been trying to figure out how to phrase this. Over 50 years, at least 50 years, in 50 years. We stopped looking in 1972.
Oh.
I mean, and just if you're guesstimating out, Nelson Rockefeller controlled the executive chamber in the 60s. And Tom Dewey before that in the 50s. So who knows when the last time you had a race for district attorney in Saratoga County, really. It's probably more like 70 years. It's at least 50. And people are excited about that. I mean, that's the first thing out of my mouth when I'm doing door-to-door. And that's the fun part about campaigning. Meeting people, canvassing, going to events. That's the fun part. You hear what's on people's mind. You tell them your perspective. This is the research I've done. This is my background. The part that I don't like is, unfortunately, everything down to the lawn signs and the pens, and the campaign literature.
Mm-hmm.
Everything costs money. And, I've done okay in my career, but, I'm not worth bazillions of dollars. Somebody like a Mike Bloomberg could self-finance the whole thing. I've got to call people up and ask them for money, which I don't like doing particularly. But you have to. So that's the fun part. And there are districts that you need to target, because if you do the numbers and you see where the voter turnout is, those are the districts you've got to go to. But on the other hand, I'm a big fan of the snowshoe capital of America, Corinth, New York.
No,
do you know Corinth was the snowshoe capital of America?
I did not know that.
Well, we did the research, and I went up there when I was a kid with my grandfather. I like Corinth. It's got that little bend in the Hudson River.
Corinth is, nice
beautiful little village.
And it used to be big back when, in the day, when small cities had good industries.
I've canvassed Corinth a couple of times. I'll go back up there again. I always end up leaving behind a couple of lawn signs. One of the things that has been kind of a index in for me is, at one point in the course of my life, I did wear the uniform of a United States Marine.
Mm-hmm.
Trigger pulling private, but a Marine nonetheless.
I mean, hey.
Graduating from Paris Island boot camp as an honor graduate, standing out in front of 280 Marines because I knew how to shoot. I was a platoon high shooter. You go through, there were four platoons in a series. You go through in a series, 70 guys in a platoon, and I was number one out of 70. I missed being number one out of 280 by 3 points because I choked on the 500-yard line. I remember this to this day, although it was a long time ago. And if I see a Marine Corps flag when I'm out canvassing, I will usually ask the question, what's the deadliest weapon in the world? And the correct response is, a Marine and his rifle. Well, one of the guys that I did that to, he looked at me and said, me.
Yeah, right. Well, God bless you for being in the service.
That was a long time ago.
My father-in-law was in World War II, and he had to go down to boot camp in Texas. He was in the Army, Big Red One, and he had terrible allergies. So they did a good thing for him. They got him out of Texas, sent him over to Germany, and he was in D-Day a couple weeks later. If there was such a thing as Flonase back then, he wouldn't have been in D-Day or Battle of the Bulge. But, I give you a lot of thanks for being in the service. We're having a terrible time getting young guys and gals into the service today.
My dad dropped out of high school to follow his older brother into the United States Navy at the tail end of the Second World War. And he got called back up for Korea. Lucky him, huh?
Yeah, really.
1952. But you mentioned D-Day. There's some family history with D-Day. My father's older brother, my Uncle Anthony, and if you look in a dictionary and you see the term barrel-chested, there's a picture of my Uncle Anthony right next to that term. He's only about 5'6", but my Uncle Anthony was in one of the naval support ships for D-Day. And my cousin Jack Hennessy, who was my dad's first cousin, is from my great-grandfather, is buried in Fairhaven, Vermont. So my cousin Jack, who's from Vermont, who lived in Rutland, drove Higgins boats and the D-Day landing. And the family mythology was that my cousin Jack, after he delivered his assignment, went back for more. I mean, I asked him, I mean, this is when he was still alive, we were playing golf, and I said, what was it like? And he said, Mike, I was so scared. You know, it's difficult to remember some of it. But
I know it.
The role in, excuse me, my history major background's going to come out here. The United States Navy played an incredible role in the D-Day landings because some of the destroyers got within 900 yards of the Normandy coast to support the troops that were in there. And, you know, I live on the north end of Saratoga Lake. Saratoga Lake is 4 miles long. 900 yards is, what, 2,700 feet?
Mm-hmm.
That's somewhere around half a mile. So I look out from my home, and I can see Snake Hill. And I think those destroyers were closer than Snake Hill to the shore. And Stephen Ambrose wrote the definitive history on D-Day. And he had it down to individual gun emplacements, but you'd see these U.S. Navy battery entries, 727 enemy shore battery engaged, 729 a.m. enemy shore battery neutralized. So these guys knew what they were doing.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, you know, it was a terrible thing. I mean, it's terrible to be in war, and he was in the second wave off the boat, him and two other guys, and they both had their heads blown off on the way down. And, you know, it gives you a different perspective on life. That's why I appreciate anybody in the service. I feel really blessed to know you. So you've been doing a lot of campaigning. What issues has campaigning brought to your attention or that you've identified with?
Well, look, the thing that I'm most proud of about the folks that have been helping me and the work that we've been doing is we're completely and totally issues-based. And the issues are really quite clear. There was a predatory cult that operated in Saratoga County for 15 years. Nexium, Keith Raniere and his little band of miscreants, who were extorting and abusing women for 15 years. The federal indictment has them in a criminal conspiracy back to 2002. Now, I built my first home on the lake in 02. In 03, I took my father to Ireland to play golf to say thank you. And in 2004, I was working out at a gym here in Saratoga, One of the people I got invited me to a party, and it was in this really nice home in this around here, in Skidmore College area, Saratoga Springs. So it was February, and this is upstate New York, and if you're invited to a party and it isn't some kind of event, you put your best jeans and your boots on and a nice sweater and you go. And I walked in, and there was immediately struck by the fact that this is some of the best dressed people I've ever seen in my life. It looked like a cross between L and GQ. And this was not a party. They were arranged in a semicircle, and there was a person that was presenting. So I don't see the person that invited me there. So I'm, okay, let me stand in back of the kitchen island trying to figure out what's going on here. And about 90 seconds into whatever this person was pitching, this little red light went off in the back of my head and essentially said, this is weird, leave. So I did. That was the Nexium cult. That was 2004. The person that was doing the pitching managed to stay out of prison.
Recruiting?
Actively recruiting in Saratoga Springs.
Yeah.
2004. The federal judge that oversaw the trial and eventually sentenced Ranieri and some of the other people asked the question, where were the local prosecutors? And that's the question we're asking in this campaign. Where were the local prosecutors? These people operated in Saratoga County, abusing and in some cases branding women like livestock. Where were the local prosecutors? We talked to law enforcement. They knew something was going on. And here's the root cause of it was they were backed up by the Seagram's Liquor Fortune, the Bronfins. They threw a lot of money around to politicians at the state level, both parties. Okay?
Yeah.
A lot of money around. So they in effect, were protected. Now, that doesn't fly with me. Prosecutor's sworn obligation to prosecute without fear or favor. Okay? Without fear or favor. And, okay, as a lawyer, what am I supposed to be afraid of? A paper cut? Somebody throwing a staple at me? Without fear or favor. They should have been prosecuted at a local level years and years ago. There are hundreds of people's lives that were ruined because of the activities of these people, and they operated until the federal government, and this it's the Eastern District of New York, not even the Northern District, it's down in Brooklyn. And again, the federal judge asked the question, where were the local prosecutors? It's the same question we're asking right now. Issue that I mentioned earlier, Saratoga County is rated as the 13th worst county in the United States for DUI? Seriously? I mean, look, the district attorney is the top law enforcement official in the county. I'm really looking forward to working with local law enforcement on correcting that, because it needs to be corrected, because it's a dangerous situation. And again, as I said, I don't want to be the district attorney that has to attend a funeral of a 7-year-old child who's the victim of a drunk driver. It's another issue we've identified. There is a repeat pedophile. His name's Jonathan Aronson. He's not being prosecuted for the last 10 months. He's pled out to this is all public record. He pled out in 2012 to unlawful dealing with a minor. He was arrested in January of this year, charged with a much more serious charge, the rape of a child. In this case, his 11-year-old stepdaughter. He's arrested on the 5th. He's out on bail on the 6th. I've read the bail transcript hearing. The district attorney didn't even oppose the bail application. The judge, Judge Murphy in this case, gave the district attorney about 5 potential reasons to oppose it. Didn't happen. Why? It's a legitimate question. Why is this case continued in Greenfield Town Court into October? Month after month after month continued. Why? Could it be because he's connected to Saratoga Springs real estate money? Last name's Aronson, A-R-O-N-S-O-N. You can Google search it. Jonathan Aronson, Greenfield Town Court. It's a legitimate question. Why? Why isn't this man being prosecuted? Again, prosecutor's obligation, prosecute without fear or favor. There have been too many examples of incomplete investigations. And again, this comes back to if you don't hold elected officials accountable, they don't do their jobs. There hasn't been a race for district attorney in at least 50 years. These are the issues we're identifying. I have an independent line called Justice and Public Safety, in addition to the fact that I'm running on a Democratic line. I mean, the reality of the situation is if you do the numbers, and I'm an incredible underdog. I mean, if you do the numbers, there's still 53,000 registered Republicans. There's about 41,500 registered Ds, registered Democrats in the county. But there's also 40,000 what are called NOPs, no parties. I think people in Saratoga County are smart. I think if you make the case and present them with the alternative, they're going to respond. And we'll find out in 39 days.
Yeah, I'm one of the independents. I was a registered Republican all my life, and I'm not getting into my politics at all, but I just grew up in a Republican home, and you do what your family did from when you were a kid. then you realize that there's good and bad on both sides. And I don't believe in party line voting. And I think people are getting away from that today. A lot of the younger people are, as well as they should. I mean, there's, you know.
I think particularly for a prosecutor, I mean, this is a quasi-judicial office, really. Party really shouldn't have anything to do with it.
No, it shouldn't.
Because you're looking for a competent prosecutor who can run a professional office.
Correct.
Train and lead a professional office. This is what I'm looking forward to doing. I'm actually also really looking forward to getting back into doing a justice court assignment. I think justice courts can be fun. But in addition to grand juries and the more serious stuff, I'll take on a justice court assignment just like anybody else in the office. But you've got to go through this political process to get to the end goal. Well, I don't know whether we need to change the state election law and make it more like a judicial election. You know, that's beyond the scope of whatever I got to do. The reality is you need to run through this political process to get to the end of it, to get to the election. The political process has me on an independent line called justice and public safety because the people I'm working with did the work to get us that independent line. It'll be right underneath, you know, coming down. You've got the Democratic line, you've got the Republican line, you've got the conservative line, you've got the Working Families Party line, and then right under that, there'll be an independent line in Saratoga County called Justice and Public Safety, and I'll be on that.
Excellent. I mean, that goes to show that there's a lot of people working for you and a lot of people signing petitions.
Well, I haven't been shying away from doing the work. I got 908 signatures by myself.
Not bad. Mm. You know,
this was in March and April, too, so it was nasty out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was on the committee to try and change form of government in Saratoga four different times.
Right.
And you made a comment before about getting signatures, and I call them the anti-group, whoever's opposing you. They're always challenging signatures. And it doesn't matter what you get a petition for. You could get a petition for a nun to add another rosary bead on her rosary, and somebody would challenge that
petition.
You got to watch
it. Those rules are pretty hard and fast on that.
I know. I'm an old altar boy. But, and it's amazing that every petition or... Not every petition, but when you have a petition drive, there are going to be a few problems. So when you said you got so many that could withstand the challenge, that's fantastic. Because if you just squeak by, like you said, you could lose, if you lose 10 or 20, it could be the matter of throwing it out.
The requirement was 1,500 signatures. And this was never a sure thing again. This is an underdog candidacy. This was never a sure thing. And I remember having a conversation with a good friend who's one of the election commissioners in Saratoga County. And he just said, wow, if you could come in with over 2,000, that would be great. So, yeah, we did. We came in with 2,151. And the picture that we took, and we put it up on our Facebook page, is I've got a 2151. And they're, big 2151. And the 2 and the 1 on either end were held by the two 18-year-old Asian-American high school students who helped us out. Which just, that picture meant a lot to me. Really.
Oh,
did.
Sure.
Yep.
Well, I mean, you need, of course, high school students can't vote, but you need the young.
Right.
You need them right up to... An old-timer.
Well, they had just turned 18, and they had just registered to vote.
Oh, okay. All right.
So this was... And also, I've got...
Have a caller.
Sure.
Why don't we take it?
Sure.
You get it's a caller. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Nancy. This is a great show, you guys. I'm just curious. You said that you got invited to that NXIVM party, and then you said that you left early. I was just curious as to know... the person who invited you to that party, did they ever contact you again? Was there any sort of backlash towards you? Did anybody try to blackball you? I would just be curious as to that information. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thanks, Nancy for calling.
Well, it was a gym that's not no longer a gym. It was a great gym. It was World Gym. And I remember Gary Wilcox, who was a professional boxer, Gary the Whip Wilcox, used to run a boxing class in there on Saturday mornings, and I'd go in, and it was a great class. But to answer the question, I met this person in the gym. I got, you know, talking as sometimes people talk in gyms, and she invited me to a, quote, party, close quote. Didn't say anything about the fact that this was a front and they were actually recruiting for a cult. I went to this, quote, party, and I walked in, and it was obviously not a party. It was some kind of orientation going on. I didn't make the connection immediately. I just knew that whatever this woman was talking about, who was doing the presenting, whatever she was selling, I wasn't buying it.
So she was the presenter?
No, the person who invited me just invited me. Yeah.
Okay. Did you ever see this woman there? Oh, you did?
I saw her in the gym afterwards, and she was not happy with me. And I was like, hey, tough.
So they got recruiters in the gym.
Yeah. Whatever group you're working with, lady, they're a little off. And I didn't, you know, I didn't make the connection until years later, until the federal, the Eastern District of New York stepped in and prosecuted these people, and the Times Union kept writing about it. Jim Odato, who was a reporter for the Times Union, began writing about NXIVM in 2002, okay, which coincides with the federal government's indictment, which goes back to 2002. So to answer the question, I didn't realize that this was this pernicious cult until years later. For me, it was just something I got invited to that was kind of weird, and I left after 90 seconds with this little red light going off in the back of my head. But yeah, I saw this person later on in the gym, and her attitude towards me turned decidedly, shall we say, chilly. How's that?
Great.
And it's like, okay, I'm just going to go back to do my sets of my leg stuff here, and we'll just life goes on.
I know Nancy, and Nancy is a great writer, and she wrote about that way back.
Right.
And I think a lot of people knew what this was about, and like you said, nothing was done about it. And it's sad because you had alluded to the fact that a lot of people were hurt, and they didn't have to be.
Hundreds of lives were ruined, and we're just asking the same question that the federal district court judge asked when he sentenced these people. And this is, again, it's a Times Union article. Where were the local prosecutors? Where were the local prosecutors? Prosecutors' sworn obligation is to prosecute without fear or favor. I don't care how much money you've got. I don't care who you're connected to. I want to back the police up because in some cases, the police risk their lives to arrest, particularly the predators. Mm-hmm. So you back the police by prosecuting the predators, not by cutting them some deal or turning the other way.
Yeah. Hey, you have, before we go, because we got about 4 minutes left, 5 minutes, and I know you got a busy day, but I do want to ask you about one case after we're off the air.
Okay.
You have a debate coming up.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do.
Was it easy getting the bait or hard to getting a bait, or it was a mutual agreement?
Actually, Saratoga Today is sponsoring the debate. So the people in my campaign contacted Saratoga Today, asked them if they would be interested in sponsoring the debate. They said yes, and the invitation was extended. And October 11th in City Center, we're still working out the details on specific time. But October 11th in City Center, there will be a debate for, once again, the first contested race for district attorney in Saratoga County in at least 50 years.
You know, as a voter, I dislike immensely uncontested races. And I think it's a good outlook that Democrats are putting qualified candidates up now for offices, where before the enrollment was so low that the Republicans ruled the contest. But it's great that there's qualified candidates now. Well, it gives people a chance to really make a decision.
I would absolutely love it if we took political parties out of, especially a district attorney's race. But
oh yeah,
you got to go through the process.
Well, judges and and DAs and that should be taken right out because you're for all the people, not for a certain sector.
Got it.
What do you want to finish up with? We got a minute or so.
Well, there's 39 days to November 8th and 29 days to early voting. This race in November 8th is all going to be about turnout. It has been an absolute privilege to do this. I've been all over the county. I was just back out in Galway yesterday. I mean, I've walked Waterford, Mechanicville, Stillwater, Victory, Schuylerville, Saratoga Springs, of course, Corinth, Galway, Clifton Park, Half Moon. I'm trying to be all over the county. And it's been a privilege, and I'm really excited about it. And I just really want to be one of the best district attorneys in the state of New York. And I'm very excited about creating the kind of work environment where the attorneys and the investigators and the admin staff are excited about coming to work every morning and doing the best work they can do.
All right. Michael, it's a pleasure, as it was the first time. And I hope I never see you if you get elected.
Well, no. We got to come back and talk about deer season.
Would you? Yeah. Exactly. But when you're elected, would you mind coming back?
Oh, I'd love to.
All right, great. And we can find out how the transition is and how everything's going. Okay.
And debate October 11th.
So yes, October 11th.
Come to City
at the
Center.
City Center.
Yeah.
And the time to be announced. All right. But you get to Saratoga today every Friday. It's a free newspaper, so check for the time. Great having you on, Michael.
Thank you very much.
All right.
My pleasure.
All right. And